Hi, and welcome to episode 4 of Real Nurse Stories. My guest today on the podcast is Trish Donovan. Trish has recently retired from the NHS after a 43-year career in nursing, working in Manchester in the northwest of England. Trish and I used to work together as district nurses, and we studied a master's in gerontology together at Salford University in the UK. It is a real pleasure to virtually catch up from opposite sides of the world to interview Trish today. This is her story.
Welcome to Real Nurse Stories. Today I'm interviewing Trish Donovan, who has recently retired as a nurse, and it's very appropriate that we're doing this interview today because it's the International Day of the Nurse. So welcome to the show, Trish, and thanks for agreeing to come and talk about your nursing career today. So what we'll do, we'll jump right in if that's okay. And my first question really would be to ask you, what made you decide to become a nurse?
Well, I didn't decide to be a nurse. My mum was a nurse, and sadly she died when I was 14. And because I looked very much like my mother, my father was always wanting me to follow a career in nursing, but I had other ideas, of course, as a teenager. And it was only when I was 20, and I was very disenchanted with what I was actually doing, working in a flower shop. And my sister had gone off to be a nurse, and she came home for the weekend, and I saw her in a nurse's uniform, and I thought, I can do that. So I applied to be a nurse, and I must say that I never ever regretted doing my nurse training in my life, because my dad was right, put it like that.
Did you?
I never had a yearning ambition to be a nurse, but obviously my dad saw something I didn't in me.
Did your mum ever talk about being a nurse when you were young? Do you ever recall her talking about the work that she did?
Not to me, no. She probably talked to my sister because she was older than me. But all I knew of mum being a nurse was her going off on night duty because she worked in Manchester. And because we were a big family, she obviously did it to fit in with the family circumstances. And so I can't even recall her being in a uniform.
No.
But it was just one of those things where you knew she was a nurse.
So how old were you when you went off to do your nurse training, Trish?
Well, I was very old compared to everyone else. I was 20, and the cohort I joined, the majority of the girls were either straight from school, they were all 18, straight from school, or they were cadet nurses at the hospital where I started my training. So that was an interesting mix, because obviously all the girls straight from school had lots of qualifications and were very clever. And all the girls who were cadet nurses had a lot of experience, and I had none. But we all you know, gelled together, and it was a really great 3 years of my life.
Where did you do your training, Trish?
I actually did it at Park Hospital, which is now called Trafford General. And Park Hospital was the first NHS hospital in the country. I think it was previously an army hospital. And then when the NHS was developed, that was the first hospital that was opened by Aneurin Bevin. So it was a very traditional training as well. We weren't in university like the girls today. And it was a very sound training that we had. I think it was the best.
And did you, because I know around that time lots of the students lived in, didn't they, in the nurses' home. Did you live in?
I did indeed, yes. It was 1973. And even to go for your interview, you were expected to arrive with your parents and have their permission to go and be a nurse. And obviously, when asked where my parents were, I had to say, well, my dad's at work and my mum has died. But that was the expectation. And you were expected to live in. I mean, as the crow flies, I didn't live that far away. But to get there, public transport wasn't in place. So it would have been very difficult to get there. So, yes, I did live in for 3 years. And that was interesting.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I can remember the same thing going for my interview, and my mum had to come with me. Not, she didn't sit in on the interview, but, you know, same thing. They had to have permission, which when you think about it now, I mean, there's none of that, is there now? It's like...
No, not at all. And it's quite bizarre, isn't it? Because I can remember the more senior staff who actually lived there as well. Like some of the staff nurses and some of the sisters. And you were told that if you were successful in your career, you too could have a lovely room that had a lounge as well as just a bedroom. And you were supposed to think that was something to aspire to.
Yeah.
But it was very old-fashioned still back then in the 70s.
Yeah. So you qualified as a nurse.
I did, yes.
And then where did you go from there?
The first job I had was as a staff nurse in a 5-day surgical ward where patients were coming in for day surgery, basically. So I got a very good understanding of pre and post-op care and the importance of communication and gathering all the information that you need to make sure the patient is safe to A, have the operation, and B, afterwards go home. So that was my very first job. And then I transferred to, got another job as a staff nurse on an older people's day hospital. So the older people were brought in by ambulance, and it was my first experience of really, really good multidisciplinary care. Because while the patients were there, they either saw a physiotherapy, they'd come for therapy, physiotherapy, OT, and they usually once a week they would meet with the consultant and his entourage, and if they had any dressings that they needed doing, that we would do those for them. And they'd stay all day and have the lunch there, and then wait for the ambulance to collect them to go home. So it was great. We all loved it. Patients as well.
Did you choose to work there, Trish, or how did you end up in that position?
I had a friend of the family. She was a nursing officer at Withington Hospital, so she offered me the job, basically. So I worked on the day hospital for 2 or 3 years, and then they needed a sister on one of the wards up the corridor, because they had inpatient wards in the same building. And a nursing officer came on the unit one day and just said, on Monday, can you collect a sister's uniform from the laundry room? We need a sister on.
Just like that.
And that was it. And there was no arguments. I mean, I didn't apply for it. They just said, we need somebody up there. So
how did you feel about that?
Well, I was a little bit nonplussed, really, because I thought, well, I'm quite liking where I am. but I think back in those days, you did as you were told. You know, you didn't really argue with anybody about anything. So yes, I went off and did that for about 14 months.
How long had you been qualified at that point when you were asked to take that role?
Possibly about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I qualified in 1977. And that, no, 2 years. Because that would have been 1979 then. 1979, 1980. Yeah. So, yeah, not long.
Not long. And how did you find that transition from kind of, because 2 years really, you kind of almost still consolidating what you've learnt at that point. So how did you find the transition from being a staff nurse to suddenly finding yourself in the position of being a sister?
From memory, I just sort of took it on the chin, if you like, and thought, right, this is my job now. And the most difficult thing I found was managing people. Mm-hmm. Because the staff on the ward didn't know me. They did push the limits in mm-hmm. terms of, you know, toeing the line, if you like. A lot of them were late all the time. And when I had to do their appraisals, by that time, we were a good mix of people who were quite friends with each other. Mm-hmm. But then I had to do their appraisals and I had to be honest. And I lost a few friends in the process. Because they obviously didn't expect me to be that honest, I don't suppose. But yeah. I think that was my first experience of thinking, well, you can't mix your social life with your work life. It's not going to work in some ways. So yeah, it was a very strange time, I suppose. Yeah. But I did enjoy trying to implement certain things like the laundry there was never any available laundry and nobody did anything about it, and they were doing things like, you know, the draw sheet that we used to call it, to prevent the bed getting wet from incontinence. They used to just turn it over and when they were making the beds, and I just thought that was awful, because I thought, for me to look after somebody who's not well, you have to put yourself in their shoes, don't you? Mm. And I thought I couldn't get in a bed like that. So, you know, that I made sure that there was enough laundry for everybody to have fresh beds every day. And it was just the little things that I noticed that would comfort patients that I felt I made a difference with. But it was a long time ago now, and the world was a very different place. The ward was split into what they called long stay and short stay. So if an older person didn't have family and they'd had a stroke, for instance, meant they couldn't go home, they lived on the ward. And then the other side of the ward, there were people who'd had something wrong with them and they were going to go home or be looked after by somebody. It was pre-nursing home.
I was just going to say that it's long-term really did mean long-term, didn't it? Because there just wasn't an alternative.
No, there wasn't. So, yeah. And after I did that, I was the sister on the ward. I actually took a career break for 8 years looking after the children. And after 8 years, I couldn't wait to go back to work. Desperate to go back to work. And I applied for a job as a bank nurse at a busy hospital. And I can always remember in the interview asking, I'd done my homework online of the sort of questions I should ask. Because the advice was always, you should think of one or two questions to ask them. They asked you the questions. So one of my questions was, would I get a mentor to help me re-assimilate back into the nursing environment, because I've been out for 8 years? Because that was one of my biggest fears, that I wouldn't know what I was doing, because the world changes so quickly, doesn't it? And I asked this question of the person interviewing me, and she said, pardon? So I said, will I have a mentor to look after me? So she said, I don't know what you mean, dear. So she didn't know what I was asking.
Was a no then?
No, in fact. So yes, I spent 3 weeks going to do shifts from 9 till 1. And after 3 weeks, I was absolutely on my knees thinking, I can't do this. I really was so terrified of doing something wrong because everything had changed so much. And I ended up at the gates to the hospital one morning thinking, I can't go through the gates. But I thought, if you don't go through the gates, you're going to have to think of something else to do, because this is your job. Mm. This is what you do. You're a nurse. So I walked through the gates and I went on, you know, on the ward. And after that, I just got so interested in all the different places that I was working. Quite a lot, I ended up on the plastic surgery ward, and I'd never worked anywhere like that before. No. And it was so interesting, you know, listening to people, what had happened to them, because they had such catastrophic accidents to end them up in the hospital that, you know, it was fascinating. You realise how many really bad accidents happen out there, and what, you know, surgeons can actually do to put someone back together again. And it was amazing. Yes, and I worked on a lot of different wards, medical, surgical, gave me a really, really good grounding for my eventual job in community nursing. But, you know, I'd experienced all the surgical wards, the medical wards, so I didn't tend to consolidate my staff nurse training until after the
later. I mean, that must have been really challenging to have 8 years out and then go back to doing literally bank shifts where you're on a different ward.
Yeah.
Literally every time. And I'm assuming you didn't have any orientation or induction or anything. You were literally off you go.
Absolutely. I mean, unfortunately for me, it was just before they brought the return to nursing program out. I think I'd been working as a bank nurse for about 6 months when they brought it out, and I wanted to do it then.
Yeah.
But I didn't apply for it in the end, because I felt that I felt comfortable in my role by that time.
Yeah.
But I do think it would be essential for anyone who has a break of any, you know, prolonged time like that they should do a return to nursing course, because it would have given me more confidence, I must admit. Yeah. But I think some of the problems I had at the beginning were the reception of the actual ward staff was not nice. It was as if you were an encumbrance, because if you hadn't worked on the ward before, you didn't know where anything was. And you were constantly asking, where's this, where's that? And I think, you know, because by the very fact that you're there, they're very short-staffed. So they didn't have time to help you, so you had to find your way about. And I do remember at the time they brought in primary nursing and team nursing. So you were either at, you know, you were looking, instead of looking after everyone looking after the whole ward, you were allocated so many patients. So you'd have about 8 patients that you were looking after. And the only problem with that was that if somebody over the other side was not around and a patient wanted to go to the toilet, you weren't supposed to help them.
I remember that.
I found that very difficult.
I'd struggle like you with that, because I can remember you'd ask somebody something and they'd say, oh, I don't know, I'm not looking after that patient. And you'd be, you know, it just never made sense to me, really.
It didn't me either. I mean, in one respect, you can understand it, because you were able to give total nursing patient care to, you know, so many patients. But you know, if somebody had gone on their lunch across the way and they weren't your patients, you couldn't say to the patient, I'm not your nurse, so I'm not doing anything for you. I mean, that just doesn't sit very well, does it?
No, not at all.
For me, primary nursing never worked for me. No, I didn't like it.
So you went then from, you did bank shifts, and then you went from there to the community, is that right?
Yes, I was chatting to somebody at the school gates, and she had a job with the community nursing team near me, and I'd never experienced community nursing in my training. I didn't know what it was. And I asked her all about it, and I said, oh, that sounds quite nice. I think I quite like that. So I just sent my CV off to all the clinics in the near vicinity. And I ended up getting called for an interview. And round about that time, up until that point, there was only district nursing sisters who were registered nurses, district enrolled nurses, and nursing auxiliaries in the community. So they just begun to have a look at bringing staff nurses into the community. So that's how I got, you know, I was lucky that at that time it was when they just decided to have staff nurses. So I went for an interview and was successful in getting a post, a part-time post, in Withenshaw, which is rather a large area of, some of it is quite socially deprived. So it was very busy as an area to work. But as soon as I started working there, I just thought, where have I been? Where have you been all my life?
Because it's very different, isn't it? I mean, I'll let you tell me, you know, the differences, but...
I mean, you are in a team, and it is a very close team, and it becomes like a family, all the nurses that you work with in the clinic. But once you walk out that door, you're on your own, and you've got to have the confidence to manage any situation that you might meet in someone's house. And in someone's house, that is your ward, if you like. It's your prep area. You've got to set up an aseptic technique as much as you can with the cat walking across your dressing pack on the floor. And it's not for everybody, but I absolutely loved it. I never look back at, from when I first started to when I stopped 10 years later.
What did you love about it, Trish?
I think it was the freedom to be autonomous in your decision making. And I think, like I said, you need the confidence to be able to do that. But I think if you're well read and you keep up to date in, you know, the evidence base that you're working with, I think you should have, that gives you the confidence to do what you do. You always knew that your fellow colleagues were a phone call away if you had any problems. And when I first started, we all used to go back at 11 o'clock to meet up just to make sure that everybody was coping and they were managing the list and have a coffee, of course.
And a loo break.
Because that was one thing you learnt to do, was hang on for the loo. But it's also, I think you also get to know the patients on the list so much better, because you can put them into the context of their life and the social environment that they live in. And you can understand, when you meet somebody on a ward, that's all removed, isn't it? Because most people come onto a ward to be admitted and they immediately get in the pyjamas or the nightie, which I never agree with, because that then makes you anonymous, if you like. You're not a person anymore, you're a patient, and most people take that mantle on when they go on a ward. Unless you're me, and you keep your clothes on. But yes, and I did like that, and you get to know their family, And it's much more intimate, I think, when you look after somebody in their own house. So yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And how long did you do that for, Trish?
I was a community staff nurse for 10 years. And during that time, I'd started studying again when I was 40. I was on my way to getting a postgraduate diploma in nursing studies, and I loved it because all the modules I did were very relevant to my job. And then someone who will remain nameless persuaded me to go and do a master's degree in gerontology, which I didn't think I could do, but obviously I could. And I think that changes you, changes the way you think and the way you approach your job. And so I'd been working in communities for 10 years, and I also had an MVQ Assessor's Award. So they needed somebody in a new role, and I was approached to apply for this job. And basically it was supporting students on a foundation degree in health and social care. So I was successful in getting that post, and it was working, being seconded to a local university to work for them supporting students. And I missed community nursing so much in the first 12 months of this job. I didn't think I'd stay at all. But what I ended up working out was that the skills I had as a community and staff nurse were the same in this new job, because you were supporting people to get to an end point. So as a community staff nurse, you're supporting somebody to get better from an illness, or heal up a wound, or mobilise, or, you know, you were helping them, signposting them and doing all those sorts of things. And the same applies with students. They need help, and they need that person in the middle to interpret everything for them so that they understand what's happening. So the skills were very similar.
And I remember those roles when they first started out, Trish, because there were lots of challenges around that, weren't there? Because it was additional training. There were roles that they hadn't had, particularly in some settings like community or GP practices. And I think your role must have been really crucial to a lot of those students' success, really, because I think for me, listening to what you said earlier about, you know, your question when you were working at the day hospital and asking about, you know, mentorship and support, really for these students stepping into something that was really very new.
Yeah.
Your role must have been really important for them at that time.
I think NHS England had worked that out, that somebody needed to be in the middle, because you had the university on one side who were providing the education, and you had the organisation, the NHS organisations, on the other. And both had very different organisational styles, and to make it succeed, you had to have this person in the middle to negotiate all the different things and explain to the organisation how it's going to work if a support worker is going to do a 2-year foundation degree and end up as a band 4, which is just underneath a registered nurse or a registered professional. And all the questions about, well, how can we allocate work to them, because they're not competent, but they will be competent at the end of the 2 years. And, you know, it was all a negotiating scenario on a weekly basis. And it was tough, because you had a lot of people who would not accept this new way of working.
No.
And it all evolved from the European Working Directive with doctors, that they worked too many hours. So they had to drop some of their roles because they were dropping their hours, two nurses. So senior nurses were taking on some of the doctor's role. So they in turn had to drop some of theirs. Mm. So this is where the trainee assistant practitioner fit, that they were going to take on some of the non-technical, well, I can't say non-technical, but some of the roles that nurses could relinquish. Mm. However, nurses were not willing to relinquish their skills because they felt threatened. And, you know, you can understand that, but if we're going to make a complete different change in an organisation, then we have to go, we have to embrace change. Mm. And that's absolutely what we're all doing. Mm. So it was very interesting because I think I was still a staff nurse when this all started, because we were then being asked to do male catheterisation for a start off, which was always a doctor's role. Mm. Venipuncture we were asked to learn to do. Mm. That was usually a doctor who did that, but then we were doing it. And suprapubic catheterisation, you always used to send them in hospital for, you know, if anything went wrong with that, and then we learned how to do it. So for me, I loved it because you were learning new things. Mm. And I do like change. I don't like staying static.
How many trainee assistant practitioners do you think that you've supported over the years?
Now you're asking me. it's got to be in the hundreds, I would think. I started the job in 2002. And I worked for the trust that I was previously employed in as a staff nurse. And there used to be 20 to 30 students every September. So you'd start with the first cohort. Mm. And then when they were going into second year, you'd have a new cohort of students. And when they, you know, the first lot finished, they'd get replaced. So there was never a time when I was without students. And I also was asked to support other organisations over the years when their practice trainer left or went abroad or whatever. And so I could have, at any one time, I could have had about 150 students on my books to support, and different organisations to manage as well. Visiting the wards and the community areas, the GP practices, talking to GPs, talking to sisters, talking to mentors, having steering group meetings where everybody came together asking, how's this ever going to work? I'm very pleased to know now that over time, that it became much more common that when cohorts finished the foundation degree, a lot of the nurse that wanted to do the nurse course, and they wanted to do this so that they could then APEL into the nursing course into second year. And there's quite a few staff nurses out there who started life as a support worker, did the TAPS course, and they're now staff nurses in the community. I've just written an article with one of my previous students, and she's a community team leader now.
That's great, isn't it?
Fabulous. I mean, that girl has done such wonderful things. She started out as a support worker, and she eventually did the trainee assistant practitioner course. She was very, very nervous, and she went all the way through that, nervous as anything, and didn't straight away get onto the nursing course, but eventually did. Then she became a staff nurse in the community, and then she did the district nursing course, the prescribers course, and now she runs teams in the community. Oh,
that's great, though. That's a fabulous legacy, really, isn't it? That's the word I want to use, you know.
Yeah, she. I mean, I'd always wanted to write a journal article about somebody who got started there and ended here.
Yeah.
Because I always used to say to the students when they started, stop panicking, you're here on this journey. You're going to be at this the other end of this, but it's a learning curve. All throughout the 2 years, you've got 2 years to do this, you'll be fine. And she went from, you know, the starting point, and she just went past the finishing line and kept going. Amazing. Really good. Yeah, so that was published this year in
That's great.
Journal of Healthcare Assistance. And she was chuffed to be published as well.
I'll bet.
Yeah, that was lovely.
I want to ask you a question, Trish, about, because you've had a lot of diverse, I think, experience is the word that I would use, from looking at where you've started and then, you know, some of the more innovative roles that you've had in terms of developing people. And as you've just talked about, you know, how many of those have gone on to be qualified nurses. What do you think is the most difficult part of being a nurse?
Oh, there's so many. I can't say that I personally found being a nurse difficult, but I do think that you do have to look after your own health before you can look after everyone else's. I think your mental health is extremely important. And I think one of the difficulties of nursing, from when I was in my training and when I was a staff nurse, if you don't reflect and discuss what you've been through in a day, because some of the things you will see and experience are quite traumatic. I think if you keep it to yourself, I think it can be quite damaging. So, but you need to be in a position where you can find a colleague or a friend who will talk to with you about things. I think in the past, we've not very good at looking after each other, I don't think.
No.
And one thing that I did find wonderful in the district nursing team was how well we looked after each other. And I found that a really, you know, it was new to me, because working elsewhere, I'd never had that before. So I used to find that difficult, that there wasn't a moment in the day, because you were so busy, that you could sit down and actually offload what, you know, your stress and what you're thinking and discuss things. Whereas in district nursing, we did make time for that. And I think at the time when I was in the community, they brought out nursing supervision, which everybody was saying, oh, I don't want to do that. But I think that would be a really good avenue. I don't know if it's still out there as a place where you could go to discuss how you feel or get help or... Because I don't think we're very good at asking for help.
No. And I think community nursing, I think, has that sense of, it's almost like people tend to stay in those teams, don't they? They don't tend to move on so much, that those teams are what I would call a solid team, that they've been through all sorts of things together and support each other. And I think there's also some research that says, it's from way back when, but I remember reading something that said that community nurses tend to keep that network even beyond working as community nurses. And I know that certainly that's the case from our point of view. I mean, I used to work as a community nurse, as you know, we worked in the same patch. And I think that is something that's more common, I think, in community nursing, to find those connections and that support. And maybe that's just the different nature of the work and the fact that it is actually in the community and not in a hospital. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know either, but it is lovely. And it is a really wonderful support network. In your work, because when you're in the hospital you do make friends and you do socialize probably with your work friends, but I never experienced it being as close as it was with district nursing.
So looking back at your career, Trish, and knowing what you know now with hindsight, what advice would you give to a younger nurse just starting out on their career?
I mean, one of the things that I've always thought to myself that was a really good thing to write down was the when they brought out the six C's. And I think if any new nurse actually read through the six C's and thought, well, yes, I can do these. You know, I can care. I can communicate. I can find the courage. And I think right now, in the current crisis that the NHS is going through, I think that everyone who walks through that door needs the courage to actually go to work, because they're under so much pressure. And it must be extremely difficult with all the PPE that they have to wear to be able to communicate with the patients. But I do think that scenario would actually bring out your, you know, fantastic communication skills, your caring skills, because this is never been seen before, the way they're having to care for patients at the moment. So, you know, communications, you know, that's completely changed the way that they're able to communicate with the patients, with each other. They've got to show absolute and utter compassion with the patients that they're looking after. So, you know, if anyone wants to be a success in nursing, I do think that the six C's is something to work with and have those things in your pocket.
What were the other three, Trish, you've listed?
There's communication, commitment.
Yeah.
So commitment to patients and a commitment to improve care. Care is at the core of being a nurse for me, because if you can't care, you shouldn't be a nurse. Compassion, and that's linked to empathy, respect and dignity. Competence is one of the other ones. And I do absolutely believe that everybody should have be competent in what they do. And sadly, I don't think the NHS actually makes that a priority. Certainly with the students I looked after, they had to prove their competence, and that's a good thing. There's commitment, care, compassion, competence, courage, for personal strength and a vision to innovate, communication, with true listening skills. So yeah, the six C's, I think, make sure that the right staff with the right skills are in the right place at the right time.
That's a really useful kind of way of remembering those values, isn't it? And what's important about being a nurse. I think that's a really good way of kind of prompting that thinking as a new nurse just starting out on a career. And I think you're right. I think the challenges, you know, facing nurses recently must, you know, you can only really imagine what that must be like, because nursing is a tough job, but it's been even tougher with everything that's gone on recently. And I think for young nurses that must be incredibly challenging.
It must be. They're going to see so many different things, but you know that what they will see, will they will learn, and it will stand them in good stead for the rest of their life. Yeah.
One of the last questions to ask you is, what would you most like to be remembered for in your career? Is your opportunity now, Trish?
Well, I would like to think that I'm remembered for supporting people when they needed it most, I suppose. I mean, I do have a lot of memories of a lot of older people that I know were very grateful for my help in, you know, when I was in the community. But I think I had those sort of skills that I wanted to help people when I was a student nurse, because I can remember being drawn to older people and, you know, simple things like washing somebody's glasses, cleaning them so that they can actually see, making sure that they've got the hearing aids in. You know, it's the simple things. You don't have to be talented to actually make somebody comfortable. So I would hope to be remembered for helping people to feel comfortable, I suppose, and that I did have compassion and I cared. That's it, really. I'm not very good at blowing my own trumpet.
And I'd maybe just add, because I, knowing you well, I know that you are somebody who has championed very much older people, and particularly, you know, the whole ageism that we often see and read about. And that's something that you've passionately, I think, instilled in all your students that you've supported. And certainly you've studied, you referenced that you did a master's in gerontology. And I think that for you is also part of your legacy, in that you've challenged others' thinking around those stereotypical views about old age.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I mean, I can remember being a staff nurse in the community and starting the master's degree, and it caused a massive flurry amongst some of my colleagues, not my immediate colleagues, but wider, that I was perhaps somehow overreaching my station. Where was that? Where did I think I was going? And all sorts of funny comments at weekends when you were working. And I found that quite strange at the time, but I probably posed a bit of a threat, because saw themselves as the bosses, and I possibly was studying at higher level than them, which, you know, can unsettle some people. But I do think that, you know, doing the master's degree enabled me to feel confident to challenge old age stereotypes and age discrimination. And you know, at my age now, I'm actually experiencing it, and it does irritate me, but I'm confident to challenge it now. It, you know, because I did study at that level, I know that I'm right.
Yeah.
And, you know, just because you're older does not mean to say that you're not that person was a person with a life and a story and a beginning. And, you know, just because they're getting near the end of their life, it doesn't mean to say that they're not interesting. You know, society, youth rules the roost, doesn't it? But, you know, there's a whole heap of older people out there with such interesting stories and tales. I mean, the person that comes to mind straight away is that Captain Tom, who's just raised 32 million for the NHS. I mean, he was incredible. And such a you know, an interesting chap. But, you know, we've met them all in the community, in the hospitals. And just because you're of a certain age, you should not be labelled as such.
No.
No, I mean, I know if I fell over tomorrow in the street and had to be picked up by an ambulance, I would be reported as pensioner Trish Donovan fell over in the street. And that label, pensioner, would be the first word.
Yeah.
And that is very annoying, but you can only keep championing the cause.
You can. And I think, you know, just going back to what you said there about a lot of the people that we cared for in the community as nurses, as community nurses, were older people, but you got to know them and you got to know their life stories. And, you know, I can certainly remember, I think, doing my district nurse training and looking at the photo on the wall, and, you know, you'd suddenly get a history and find out that actually the person you're talking to was really well known when they were younger, almost famous for things, you know. And that's often, people don't, as you rightly say, don't see that. They just see the older person. They don't see the real person. Well, thank you, Trish. That's a fascinating journey, and we've touched on lots of things there. And I think, I know that you've recently retired from work, from the NHS, and from the work that you've done with the trainee assistant practitioners, but I think you've certainly left a huge legacy. And I know, you know, given the numbers of students that you've supported and the passion that you have around older people and challenging ageism, and I'm sure that those students won't ever forget the work that you've done. I'm sure they won't. In fact, I know they won't.
Don't write elderly, right? Older person. Take that out of your essay. You need to.
But you're right. You know, and that's important. It's important that they have a role model and a mentor to help them understand that. So thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me today. It's been good to catch up. Thank you, Trish.